Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for tuning in to Update. Sorry about the technical difficulties there for a minute. Just had a couple of the old switches on the wrong side. So, yes, once again, you've tuned into the brilliant Anthony Blomfield, and we're going to have another brilliant show on technology. So, thanks again. It's one of those beautiful Saturdays. Quite, it was almost ridiculously hot, I think, for you know, still spring. Today's show, okay, so we're going to be talking about open source software. So if you heard that word before, you might just think it's a bit of a nerd's term, but actually it's very relevant to everybody now, the open source software world. So I'm hoping you'll really enjoy that, and I'm going to try and make it as easy as possible for you to understand, giving you some tips. And the big thing about open source software, of course, is you can save money out of it. So, you know, I really hope that that's, you know, can be useful as well. Okay, so yeah, and then we'd always like to start the day. We'll give you a bit of news, but just before that, I'll give you my contact details. So it's Anthony, you've got chat at update.chat, and you've also got my website, update.chat, there as well. And if you need to find me somehow, you'll find me on that website, update.chat. Lastly, yes, I get a few questions on just technical matters. Some of them are very fairly vague on like issues with your computer and stuff like that. So try to write down specifically what's been going on, and then I can answer them more clearly, email you back, etc. And also, if you've got subjects you want to talk about, then we're happy to discuss those as you know, as you get, you know, as they become more popular, if more people say a subject, I'm more likely to talk about it. So today's show is on open source, but before that, yeah, let's get into some news. Thank you. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, so there's a lot going on in the wide world at the moment, as you all probably know. What's not going on? Well, SpaceX is really going further than anybody expected, effectively delivering their internet to the world, Starlink, and they've been going strength to strength. Some people that follow the rocket news, as I do, might have been surprised to see that Russia has just launched a their spaceship to the International Space Station last week, and that was to take American astronauts. So that's a paradox, because SpaceX, which is Elon Musk's space company, has the contract now to NASA to send astronauts to the space station using their Falcon rocket, which is a very late model, self-governing, autopiloting transport mechanism from Earth to the International Space Station. They pretty much push a button and it will take them all the way there and land it into the space station. And SpaceX has been doing that, but the Soyuz spaceship from Russia sent a team of astronauts to the International Space Station last week, And that's because of a long ongoing contract that NASA's had with the Russian Space Force. Because for many, many years, NASA, people probably don't really realize this, really had none of their own spacecrafts to get people to the outer space at all. And that was because the retiring of the space shuttle, and people remember that with the wings, in 2011, and that was sort of the last time that NASA had their own space shuttle. So, yep, so they used the Russian spacecraft this last week, and that was the final contract, effectively, to use them as a sort of outsourced company to get astronauts. Yeah, so now the other thing, of course, is, where do I start with the old TikTok thing? It's still going through all the problems with old US government trying to stop them from operating. Uber and Lyft are in trouble with false advertising, as they often are. As far as consumer electronics, I think I mentioned last time this, but some more interesting news is that the consumer manufacturing company Foxconn makes all your consumer electronics. Is getting into the electric car market, and so Elon Musk at the same time is going even further with upgrading his huge Germany-based manufacturing plant and in China. And so Elon Musk is sort of trying to see out the competition by upsizing all the Tesla manufacturing cars. So, I think there's kind of really, you know, once you get sort of the consumer electronics companies making electric cars, then hopefully they'll go the same way as, you know, your flat screen TV prices and all your consumer gadgets now that, you know, started years ago is really expensive, and now that's probably every year they drop in price. So if that happens to the cars, I think it'll be pretty amazing revolution for the electric car. But Tesla's still the biggest in the supply for lithium batteries. So just back on the rocket, of course, is our own team Rocket Lab, again putting some they just launched a satellite a couple of days ago, and that was for a company called Planet. And they're putting in some low Earth orbits satellites as well. So they're going from strength to strength. And they're getting into a lot more side services, like the data collection for customers and stuff. So, yeah, that'll be quite interesting. And, yes, that's good to see. Again, thanks out to Microsoft. They're building a great big data center here in Auckland. So that's good. I think some of us probably don't realize that every time you use some of these services, you know, to do your streaming movies sometimes or your email, you're actually having to push the data all the way through from Sydney in most cases. Every time you move your mouse in some of these situations, the data's been sent all the way to Exchange up to the beach. I think it's up near Murawai or somewhere up there. Fiber optic cable under the sea all the way to a server in Sydney. Ticks over your information, sends it back. And that literally can be a mouse movement. There are a lot of companies using virtual servers. So the fact that Microsoft's going to have a server, a big data center in Auckland, where your email can basically bounce, you know, between your local town and in Auckland. There's so many value propositions for that. It's not just the speed, it's the reliance. It's things like being able to tailor the packet protocol so that Microsoft can get your dedicated VoIP type services if need be, and also allows for the future for more dedicated transmission, because at the moment, you know, you've got to use the fiber optic protocols that are owned by the big companies, and you just sort of jump on the bandwagon of whatever their technology is. So the fact there's a data center for Microsoft, it's going to do a lot of cool things, and I think you'll see some unique innovation by having a local team there of tailoring those services. But anyway, let's get into my topic of the day, and that's going to be a lot more interesting. Sorry. Don't forget, update.chat, if you need me. Okay, so let's get into the actual topic. Thanks, guys. So, yes, so what are we going to talk about? And you know, open source software. So, if you have heard about this, this is for you. If you haven't heard about it, it's for you. And if you're a super whiz kid in open source software, I hope to think this is for you as well. Trying to cover everybody in one little diatribe here. So, okay, so open source software. All right, so let's cut the tunes there, excuse me, and let's get you straight into what's going on with that. Okay, so you got yourself comfortable, everybody, got your cup of tea, tuned in for some good hit to the tech. Going to get right into kind of my favourite subject in a way, and that's open source software. It's going to be a big money saver for pretty much anyone these days if you've got a computer, and especially if you're a small business owner, and also even if you're a medium-sized business. I'd like you to, tune into this, tell your friends if you know someone in that area, send them a tweet and tell them, look, tune in, because I'm going to be talking about open source software. I'm going to talk on the sort of the big picture stuff, maybe get into some nitty-gritty. And quite frankly, this goes on again from, how I like to make this show, about tailoring technology for how it's applicable to New Zealand. Excuse me, a bit of a cough. I hope it's not COVID. Yeah, had too much water on the way here. Okay, so there's open source software is applicable to New Zealand because, quite frankly, we are the kind of country that could easily transition more of our medium-sized businesses, backroom operations, to basically nearly free software in many cases. And, it can be a saving, and every saving's important. And it's, for me, what could be the saving is not necessarily the up-and-front price of some software. It's the ongoing support when you don't have control of software. You're always beholden to the manufacturer of that software to sort of come in and, spend quite a lot of money for proprietary software. So open source is really a place that we can save money in the first place. And it's not just about saving money, though, which is the big thing. Because it's open source, I'll get to what that means soon, it means that you can innovate it. And us Kiwis, we love to get in and tinker with things. We're a bit of a tinkerer. And so if you've got open source software, you can tinker it and make it do more than it's supposed to do out of the box. And I'm serious about that. And that's kind of the whole point of open source. Cool. All right, so I sort of feel like we need a bit of a sting. Yeah, sorry about that this morning. I was just trying to get something to play on the old laptop here, and it wasn't playing for the theme, but here we go. So, make it all comfortable for you. So what we're going to talk about, number one, is what is open software? What does it, where did it sort of start a little bit? And common examples. So let's sort of start with what, maybe I think's misunderstood about it and how far it goes back. So number one, a lot of people think open software is synonymous with Linux, and the guy called Linus Tyrold, who was the Swedish guy who wrote the kernel for Linux back in the 80s. But actually, open source software predates him by quite a bit in many ways. It really goes back to the first universities that were experimenting with computer science, the very essence of computer science. And I still haven't done a show specifically on that, but that's one to come. And computer science was such an area of new knowledge that the universities generally shared any discovery with each other. And, of course, when in those days they had to put the code in generally by punch card with paper. And if someone had worked out how to effectively mathematically solve, the circumference of a, not a ball, but like one of those strange, like an egg-shaped ball, And how would the circumference work out, and how could a computer do that, or what was this, so the circumference of, the moon, or whatever. Whatever the mathematical thing they were trying to discover back in the sort of 50s or 60s, the 60s mostly, was written down, and that punch card was sort of shared on that program, was shared around the other universities. And then when it got to the point of transferring that data that from punch cards to floppy disks, or quite frankly, whatever the format was originally, reel to reel, or let's say floppy disks, they would say, look, well, I've got this app that works out when, you know, I've written a code that works out how to search through a dictionary for the shortest word, okay? You know, so the computer loads in all these words, and there could be a software program that goes, I know what the shortest word is, okay? And even those days, that took a bit of, you know, bit of number crunching, and that would be shared. And so the universities were actually sharing all these programs with each other. And no one ever thought that there would be another way of doing software. No one thought, oh, well, I've written an app to work out the shortest word in a sentence. I'm going to bundle it and package it and sealed wrap, put in a CD, call myself Microsoft and get you to pay for it. That wasn't even in their purview. So they just thought, well, you know, we don't want to have to write every single thing again from start. So if you've worked out how to do that, send it to us and we'll send you how to display better color tones on a monitor. So there was sharing, and the kind of the original sort of computer science was what we call open source. They didn't really call it anything. They just sort of shared it. And so people just added to it. Now, Steve Jobs and Apple and IBM got together, yes, there was definitely the notion of protecting their software, but that was done by what was called writing software, okay, and they would write it, let's say it was for the Apple Mac, let's say right in the beginning of 1984, some poor overworked, decent, hardworking engineer with a beard in his 50s, all night, quite literally at Apple, all night, all day, all night, they'd sleep under the desk when they had real good work ethics, and they would write for Apple, maybe a bootloader, or a driver input, or the memory controller software. And then what we do, you'd write it all literally in black and white text, almost as you would a Word document. And it would, you know, people have done, don't know what source code looks like. It's variables, input, mouse over, underscore, you know, X, Y, Z, output, blah, blah, blah. And this is all written down. And Microsoft was doing the same. And in fact, a lot of engineers were paid to write at this stage by every single line of code that they wrote, they would get some money for it. Oh, love the American capitalist, eh? A bit like picking fruit. So, you know, you get 50 cents every tomato you pick or whatever in these days. They would be, okay, that's one line of code, that's 50 cents, another line of code, that's a dollar. And so what coders were actually doing, and as a side, we're actually writing code to be as verbose as possible, which is quite cute in a way, but good, because, you know, that's why they had all quality code that was all laid out nicely. But anyway, so they write these out, and then they were getting paid to do it. And then, of course, you know, what people don't understand is this is thousands of lines of code to do the most smallest thing. You know, memory controllers, you know, print it out, it's probably half a book. Might be more. I mean, I don't know about memory controllers that much. But yeah, it's like source code is, you know, books often of text, especially in those days. All right. So then what happened is Apple, you know, the engineers, like I say, working hard. Steve Jobs literally would come in, you know, whack them with sticks. God, I love that guy. And so, you know, work harder. And they'd be doing this. And then, of course, what would happen once they'd written this code, computer doesn't understand even source code as much as people think a computer does. So, you know, if you've ever opened programming language or source code or a piece of code, uncompiled code, you'll see, you know, and people, I mean, you can, quite frankly, you can almost do this now just by clicking on any website, right clicking and go view page source. In fact, yeah, that's pretty much what they would write. So there's your source code there. If you're a bit of fun now, you know, run over to your kitchen laptop, right click on a website, go view source code, and oh my god, there you go. It's what they were writing back in the 50s and 60s. So that's your source. And you can see what it looks like. You know, I don't know what you're looking at today, but you've probably got something like, you know, \\, body equals class, eyes tag pass, all the things that you seem to think, you know, don't make any sense. Well, the computer doesn't understand that, actually. And it's like, huh? Yeah, it doesn't. That's a source code. So the computer doesn't really understand that. Now, and when they wrote the source code for the operating system back in the 70s for Apple, they wrote it as like this. But then, of course, what they would do, and on the original Apple, it would go through a compiler. It gets compiled. And this is that fuzzy area where people kind of turn off. And I think it's not explained clear enough at university. I really mean that. Once the code has been written, and believe it or not, the whole point of code, if you will, like this, is to actually make it for humans to read, which I think is quite cute because it's so, you know, hard to understand. But the whole point of it is actually to make it for us to understand. It's not computer, well, the computer understands. It's so we understand what we're putting in, which is pretty annoying if you think about it. You think, oh, God, I have to learn computer code. Well, no, you're actually just learning. You're actually just using something to make us, you know, which was the whole point of it is so we understand it. Anyway, so because, you know, you've got the word name, property, equals, IG, site, name, you know, \, bold, page, font, meta. And these are English words, you know, even http://:// ?/:// I mean, that's just, you know, bastardizing the English language, but it is an English language, right? So, but the computer has no idea what the word HTTP is or what the word, you know, input, output, if dot, get dot is. The computer really understands in this level of abstraction or in compiling language, and it really understands machine code, which is normally considered opcodes. And yeah, eventually it gets down to binary, but you don't have to get that far down. It turns it into effectively machine code. And that is to do with the manufacturer of the hardware itself. And so because Apple, you know, had partnerships with Motorola, they were using the Motorola chips, the compiler took the code and compiled it into this really bizarre language that you wouldn't ever really understand. And you mostly can think of it as hexadecimal if you were to kind of open it. It's effectively really, you know, what would it look like? You know, x41444jjj=4411jjj440001j. You know, thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands and well, millions of lines. You know, J11711000X11. So once the source code that the poor engineer for Apple had compiled it, it turned into machine code or operational code or computer code or whatever you want to call it, compiled code. No one could reverse that to see what the source code was. In other words, once your software was compiled and running on a computer, you really had no bloody idea how it was made or what it did, quite frankly. Because it's not too dissimilar to encryption or the Enigma code. Once it's been compiled through the compiler, it's running on your computer. You basically, it's not mathematically impossible given sort of a trillion years to decipher it. But, you know, for all, you know, average people, it's just impossible. So once they've got it compiled, yeah, it ran on a computer. Bang, that's it. So that's what Apple were doing. And this became the concept of the source was hidden in Apple's vaults. And Microsoft was doing the same when they wrote their Microsoft Windows. That would get the source code. Once it had been written, all those engineers would, you know, the microchip would be in their heads, so they were never allowed to copy the source code, it would be compiled, and the source code was never on the laptop that you brought. So this was a new kind of error. I mean, it's not the error of that the source and compiling wasn't of computer science before Stephen Apple, but this was a time when source code became profitable because only Microsoft could change Microsoft Word from then on. They had the source code, no one else. If you wanted to add, let's say, the color pink to the borders in Microsoft Word, even in the early days, well, that would be Microsoft that would have to code that, recompile it, and send it out as an update. And so, so this is the kind of world which, because I know what business owners are like, quite frankly, they like to sort of understand what's running on their, you know, what makes their business tick. And I think poor business owners, they, you know, there's a lot of sort of lies and half truths about, you know, what software is. And so they're just sort of bludgeoned into the wall to say, oh, you just have to take it and no one else can fix what you've got. But yeah, that's your source code. Now, and then of course, the profit involved for that was what the source code was then patented by Apple and Microsoft. And then, you know, that was their operating system. Bang, that's it. I've got it. And, you know, and I think what's beautiful in a way, Microsoft called Microsoft and they put the software on a CD. They, you know, they remember the old CDs, pretty small. They want to box it in this huge box, maybe 800 times the size of the CD, you know, and there's nothing in it, just a big cardboard box. And then they'd print it out looking really cool, Microsoft Word, and then they'd glad wrap it, and then they'd seal it all, and they'd put a little half instruction book in there, and maybe, you know, maybe a sticker. And that's, you know, oh, it's $400. Wow, you know, good business, you know, I love it. But, you know, and that's what we're still doing. That's what we're still doing. Now, we don't often buy the box with the CD in it, but now we, you know, we go to the app store. Oh, yeah, that does that. Let's maybe we get a sticker in the post, and that's what we're buying. And so, right, so anyway, let's get on to how does that take us to the open source community. So the open source community not only give you the compiled code with any software that's released, the whole point of open source is you get the pre-compiled source code in the download. Literally, half the time it's in the same folder. Sometimes it's a separate folder, but generally it can be in the same folder. So if you don't like the way Firefox, you guys, runs on your computer, if you don't like the fact that Firefox has an orange icon even, you can open the source code for Firefox. You can change the way that it, you know, configures HTML, and then you can recompile it. Bang! You've got your own own web browser, and it's not only not despised by Firefox. It's the whole point of Firefox. It's the whole reason for their being. It's this concept of people can contribute to the quality of the software. So really, it's quite a phenomenon, and I guess there's a little bit of happiness involved, but it's not just that. It's really to do with efficiency in some ways, and the creative world of how fast innovation can happen in IT, and also the fact that writing lines of code is boring, so you're better just to grab the lines of code that have been written by someone that does what you want, and copy and paste it and add your own. Much more interesting. And so many ways, you know, the open source now is a superior product to the proprietary Apple and Microsoft. And, you know, the amount of people that are finally moving over to Linux is huge, you know. And word on the street, that was actually for my news item, is there is a lot of inside talk about Microsoft releasing their own version of Microsoft Linux, going away with trying to own the source code. And I believe those rumors, quite frankly. Anyway, and so, and of course, Apple did that eventually when Steve Jobs came back. He gave up owning what was called the kernel and said, oh, stuff it, let's just copy the Unix kernel. Anyway, so Right, so what does this mean for you and your average business user? Okay, so because most of you don't really care about your kernels and your open source, you know, compiling data. But what you mostly do, quite frankly, is you do care about paying money. So the first thing is, you know, you got your computer, that's fine. And most people are using some version of telecommunications on your computer, you know, your Skype or whatever. You're using your creative media on your computer. That's normally sort of maybe Adobe Photoshop. And then you're using your business office admin software. That's your Microsoft Excel and Word. All right. So all those three areas have been done to death now by the open source platforms, and they really, quite frankly, are superior. So let's start with the biggest one, OpenOffice. All right, let's finally get this nugget out there, and it's not no more excuses for you people. OpenOffice is a version of Microsoft Office. In the sense that it is the same utility, it does the same thing, but it is not owned really by anyone. It's administered sometimes by certain companies, but it's an open source system. And how this works is that obviously you're used to, you know, the old Word. Don't forget, before Microsoft Word, there was other, you know, there was a lot more companies before them. But the idea of word processing is very old computer science. So anyway, so there's a company now called OpenOffice, and what that is it is almost button for button replica of Microsoft Office. Quite frankly, it's not beating around the bush. It's really a bit of a knockoff in a way, but it does everything really Microsoft Office does and more. And it's not because they're just copying Microsoft Office again, because Microsoft Office is just a brand of what was already being done previously in computer science. That's number crunching by Excel, because the first one I think was called 123 and Lotus Notes and things like that. But though that product suite and was yeah, like again, you OpenOffice does their own versions, and they're bloody better. So you have OpenOffice Word, you have an OpenOffice Excel, if you will, you know, or what they call a spreadsheet. You have an OpenOffice sort of a PowerPoint type thing for doing your PowerPoint. You have an OpenOffice drawing program for doing all your vector drawing, and so effectively OpenOffice will run all what you're used to in your daily suite. And there's no license fees, there's no update fees, there's no administration fees, there's no got yous, there's no captures, there's no incompatibilities with any other operating systems. It will run on pretty much, well, it does and runs on every operating system. And quite frankly, if it doesn't, if you make your own operating system, you can compile it to run on that. So it's super, super compatibility. So, you know, that's a lie about it being compatible. And if you've got, you know, 1,000 staff, and they're all, you know, all they're doing is, you know, sending out letters or typing or using Microsoft Excel, even WaterCare, you know, they all their staff using Microsoft Excel, put in a few bits of data, just to transition to OpenOffice. Boom, there's millions potentially saved. And all that money, send it to me, because I will change the world with a dollar. So, yeah, don't spend it on another crappy Ferrari, please, people. Send it to me. Update.chat if you need to, yeah, send me all your glorious investment. And that's pretty much your office suite. So this OpenOffice, now there is one that's the flavor of the most people in the community prefer, and that's called LibreOffice. But there's actually about 15 competitors, well, not competitors, community solutions to the office suite. Now, get it straight out there. First of all, yes, it does. It opens Microsoft Office docs and it saves as Microsoft docs. Okay, so you can open a Microsoft .word.doc in OpenOffice, and you can write it all and color it in, and you can save it as a doc. The reason people kind of jump up in their seats because they've got an OpenOffice document is Microsoft make it deliberately pain in the ass to natively open an OpenOffice document, even though it's a community standard, because they only want to open off Microsoft Docs. So you would end up having to, I mean, you can do it, you just have to what's called decompress it. But the open office doc by default, when you save, and if you never do a thing and you could just write a letter and you click save, it will save it as its own system called open office format or open document format, and that isn't natively open by Microsoft Word in all cases. And that's where people go, oh my god, I got open office, I can't use it, it's a load of crap, I go out to the shop and spend $1 billion. And so what you need to do if you're really fussy about making sure all your friends who don't know how to, you know, convert a file, you just simply, when you click save, and clear, instead of simply going save, go save as, and then choose Microsoft format. So that's pretty much the caveat for a lifetime free of brilliant, bloody good software that you won't die of a heart attack having to, you know, fund it all and your IT staff keep coming back for more checks. So there you go. Not rocket science. OpenOffice, LibreOffice, there's a whole lot of them. Even most Linux distributions, it comes pre-bundled. You don't even realize it. And the same again for their sort of version of Excel. Same again for their PowerPoint sort of version. And again for their, I think they even do an Access database too, if you really want that. But the good thing is my experience, they're more friendly, user-friendly, because the standards are community constructed. So they will treat fonts, you know, they will open any kind of font. You'll be able to add your own font. You'll be able to print PDF easily. You'll be able to plug it into any printer, even the Soviet spacecraft printers, because it's an open source. Probably they wrote half of it, quite frankly. So that's, you know, a no-brainer, quite frankly. I'm amazed. A friend of mine recently had a problem with her computer and I just simply wiped it and put OpenOffice on, and a few road bumps, but not a big deal. So please do that. Now, the second area, of course, is your creative team. Now, I'm sure most people believe Weta Workshops is a bit of a brilliant technical company, and especially in computer graphics and computer design, right? Yes. Well, here's a secret. Now, it might have changed since, you know, I was told this, but their primary operating system is Linux, specifically Ubuntu Studio. Sorry to let that out, Weta. But Ubuntu Studio is used to do all these incredible movie animations, these explosions, these Fast and Furious 900, you know, these absolutely award-winning gold standard special effects is done on open source software. I understand, effectively, I'm sure that, you know, their system is, you know, above my pay grade in a way, but effectively their operating system of choice is open source, and a lot of the grading or special effects software, I mean, I'm sure they use a lot of proprietary software, but there is a lot in the creative field which is open source. One of the famous ones for three-dimensional design and for movie animations is Blender. But then you've got the whole suite of your photo, your image manipulation software that really punches well above the Photoshop world in the open source community. And you can just Google this and you'll get, you know, heaps and heaps of alternatives to Adobe Photoshop. Vector programs, 3D designs, your what's called your rendering software, and they're all there. And in fact, like I say, your Ubuntu Studio just gets the best of the best of them, sticks it all in the operating system, and bang, you don't even have to think. You just download that. So if you are in the creative world of graphics, now, I know what it'll be like if you're a graphic design company and you've got timelines for your magazine. Well, this is where you should, you know, pay people like me to be your IT people, quite frankly, rather than just knocking the cheapest guy off the list who will just give you the old boring standard Adobe because they're not skilled enough. Get a creative IT person to really configure an open source creative solution. Now, depending on where you are, you might really find that your product flow or your process flow on an open sourced version of Photoshop and Illustrator will be faster for your clients. The only thing is it just takes a little bit more setting up to get your staff transitioned to it. So because, you know, obviously you've got all your fonts that you're used to, all your magazine prints, all your images in one place, you've got your standards, you've got your batch processes, and I understand it would be, you know, if you're hard down the line of printing ads, that you couldn't just delete all your Adobe stuff overnight. But especially if you're a small guy, you know, and you're trying to get into the world of design, and or if you're a big guy like Saatchi or DMD, you know, fire IT team, quite frankly, many times, and or get someone smart, get in there and set up a division that is open source, because you can do more things, you know. You can really leverage 3D design. You should be using, for example, if you're doing page banners on people's websites, well, you should be using OpenGL or 3D. You know, you should be leveraging new technologies that are available easily in 3D and open source software. And open source software gives you the ability to get real-time feedback from your customers. You know, you can integrate technically every time they click on it. I mean, you could do something like, I had two banners up on my customer's website. One was pink, one was yellow. So far, everyone hovered their mouse over the pink one, but everyone clicked on the yellow one. And you could actually feed that straight back, I kid you not, into a graphics program that changed the color on an algorithm for the banner real time without you thinking to choose the right tone of color for a banner. I mean, that's real, you know, that's what data analytics are supposed to do. You know, you're supposed to get meaty, you know. I won't lie, you know, all these IT people, quite frankly, they just copy and paste what someone else has done. But no, you need to get meaty when you're really innovating. But yeah, that's your open source with your Adobe suite. So the most common product is called GIMP, but there are other ones as well. And Google released their own as well. So anyway, and that's your suite. Now then you've got, while I'm on the creatives, you might as well talk about the music industry, because the music industry obviously has their own very expensive software. But if you're a budding musician, yes, there's Adobe, Ubuntu Studio, not only bundles all your brilliant visual design, but it bundles in heaps of music making drum machines and beat synthesizers, you know, for free, guys. Free, no strings attached. It's insane. Now, when I say no strings attached, there is a moral obligation. Your moral obligation is to make good quality stuff, be the best version of yourself, and to thank the people by way of, you know, literally, quite frankly, it can be sending an email to some of the programmers saying thank you, or posting on Facebook, or what they really love in open source is if you suggest a feature improvement. You know, so this is the moral obligation to give back, is to be part of the community for bettering people's lives. You can't sell the software. Anyway, so that's your music. So there's your Microsoft suite, sort of open source LibreOffice. You've got your Adobe sort of suite, quite frankly. And that's your GIMPs and other, there's so many. Like I say, Ubuntu Studio has them all, but you can just Google open source versions. And don't be scared. These are actually, in my experience, better quality software, and the source is open. So it actually means that it's more likely to not have a virus. It's more likely to not be a Trojan, because you can see the source code. So any engineer can look at this code. And quite frankly, you can experiment with the code, open source code, if you really feel like you want to do something better. The code is open. It's open source. And then the third one, of course, is music creatives. What else was I going to do on that? Oh, your telecommunications, that's right. So your telecommunications, yes, there's a whole lot of open source telecommunications software. God, I'm amazed how we... Really, people have only seemed to have gotten their head Skype and Zoom? Wow. Only 1,000 years. Nah, I won't exaggerate. Only about 20 years after everybody else did it properly. Twitter, for that matter. Yeah, let me hate on them. Please stop using it, media. So before Twitter's really just a rerun of ICQ. in many ways, it's really just a hack of a beautiful sort of Unix-based system called ICQ, which was a myriad of explosions of hashtags and bots and channels and chats and just, but you had to download the software called ICQ. And then, of course, Twitter just got all the most boring parts of ICQ, dumbed it down a billion times for the average person, and put it on the website. But ICQ is a powerful tool, still used. I mean, in fact, you used it on the help desk when I was working at Apple. They use it for internal communication of complex handling of queries. But yeah, ICQ, there's IRC. Ah, sorry, I keep saying ICQ, didn't I? So it's IRC, I actually meant the name of it. ICQ was a chat program. But there's heaps of open source or telecommunications things that effectively do a your virtual team meetings. And again, they can be configured. So in other words, oh, well, that doesn't quite work with my boss sound system, and I actually like I like to be able to put a sound effect so I sound like when I'm under the sea when I speak. Well, you know, tell your IT guy, stop playing games and learn how to modify code, or otherwise he's fired, and he can write in lines of code to the open source telecommunication software to give you sound effects. Or if he knows Python, which we all should now, he can Python script this open source telecommunication software to work with a sort of special effects sound software so that you could download thousands of samples of special effects into the telecommunication software. You can't do that with Zoom because, again, the code is closed. We don't know what it's doing. We don't have control over it. Oh, totally born in the wrong time, trust you. Trust me. Okay, so that's telecommunications. Now, these are all your computers. You know, this is all your consumer stuff. Now, for the back office, miles ago there, also there is huge open source software in the back room staff. So number one, get straight into it. So, you know, if you're running a hosting solution for your company, okay, please, people, you don't need so much of what you've been told, okay? Get a Linux-based server. Get a Linux-based server, people, and get a Linux-based custom and management system, business operating system, you know, within reason. You know, talk to people that care about you and your company. You know, everything's for everything. But if you can be creative with problems for your business and workflows and smartness and improving your richness of your own product, open source will give you that flexibility. And so, you know, get a Linux-based system. Even print servers can be open source. And, of course, the big one is your database, you know. So, you know, if you've got big databases, well, you can use MySQL. And that's an open source, again, database system for backroom. And you can push that, for example, if you're running an intranet and you're spending millions on some proprietary intranet solution. Well, there's so many open source intranets. Intranet is basically an internal internet, you know, so you know who's sick and all that. There's so many. And if you're really stuck, you know, drop me a message, update.chat, and I'll train up some proper computer scientists to come out and blow the whole IT world upside down and let New Zealanders know what IT really is about. It's not paying millions for an average database that does average things to get in the way of your average productivity. It's to use AI to predict what your customer is going to do. That's where AI is. That's where statistics is. That's what data analytics. That's the real world. Okay, but it starts again open source because otherwise, what's the point? Because you know you can't modify anyone else's proprietary code. Okay, now so back in the back room again. So your web technology. A lot of New Zealanders are using Linux as a web hosting. 70% of the world is still run on open source Linux web hosting. and they're fantastic, but even things like if you want to be a web host, you can get open source to manage your customers. Your databases, again, obviously, we're very used to, you know, this has been beaten around the bush a bit, but WordPress, I guess I'll give you that secret. WordPress is a product made by engineers with zero understanding of marketing. Unfortunately, a lot of these products are, because WordPress is not WordPress. It's really a middleware software. It's almost an operating system, WordPress, quite frankly, and it's been labeled WordPress. Can't believe those poor bastards. But WordPress is effectively a conduit between a database, any database, and a web server. It really is it's a middle layer between a web server and a database. So if your business needs data and it wants to send it by way of web, then WordPress will often do that. So there you go. Think of it. Do I want my customer to look this up on the internet? That's a web server. Do I need data? That's your database. How do I get that? Make it look pretty. That's often WordPress, quite frankly. Now, it's not perfect, so don't send me hate mail for it's not going to work for everybody. I wouldn't run a hospital on WordPress, but it's very good for prototyping. It's very good for internal intranets. But actually, there's a whole lot in that area of middleware, you know, that sit between a server and an Apache web server. You know, there's Joomlax, there's Mambo, there's so many. In fact, there's even open source software that will let you choose which open source middleware software to install. Last count, I think I saw something like 1,000 different middleware. It sort of needs to be a name for it, but people think of them as sort of web servers, but they're not. They sit between a web server and a database. They do the smarts, you know. Yeah, and so that's one. So you put all this together. The big thing is that open source software really only becomes powerful if you understand, the CEO understands, and if you have a board of directors, let's be honest, half of them won't know, they're just playing golf. So you find a good CEO who understands his customer and where his customer's going, what his customer wants. You double his pay, give him a good dinner, and he manages to find proper creative thinking, problem-solving people. My experience, you know, if you want an IT people, make sure they've got some maths in their degree. You know, if you can do calculus level 2, stage 3, you generally know how to problem-solve. But anyway, so get them in your room and say, look, how do I get this product to my customer faster? How do I track this? How do I know this customer wants to buy this? Blah, 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 blah. Write them all down, because the beauty of open source software, unlike proprietary software, is it's about your business. It's really about where you want to go. It's your customers you're solving problems for. Then you tweak the software to fit you. Now, the best way to do that is if you're interested in this road, you basically download the open source software that's already been made that mostly fits what you want. Think of it as an envelope. So you might have, I need a database and I don't need to use, SAP, for example, and good on SAP, I love them. But you download MySQL, okay, so, all right. So now I'll need a way of working with a mobile phone. So, you know, maybe this is software that get the data to the phone. Maybe you have logistics, so you have a logistics system. Maybe that's proprietary, but maybe even there's some that's not proprietary. And then you place together how your business runs, and you sort of can build the model up of existing open source software. I mean, it could be even as simple as, okay, well, I want this person who's working on my 3D design in Blender to, let's be really off the top of my head. Let's say, you know, these little silly chats. You chat and then you're like, oh, hey, Kiwi Bank, how can I inquire about this? Let's say you're selling mountain bikes, okay? And they said, all right, well, can you show me, you know, like I want a mountain bike, but, you know, I need one that I like the seat to be lower than the handlebars, all right? And so, I don't know, you might be making them or whatever. So the other person on the other end of the chat, let's say they're, you know, partly an engineer, and they, a software, you know, one of your engineers, and they have open Blender on their computer, and they say, all right, well, I've got the model of our existing product mountain bike, but while you're there, while you're in the chat, I'm just going to start tweaking the dimensions of this mountain bike, and I want you to see it in real time in the chat window on your browser. What are the proportions you think are better for you, right? Wow, okay, well, that's not been done before, but let me just remove the handlebars up a bit. Oh, yeah, that's good. It could be as simple. It could be things like the guy himself can sort of spin it in 3D on the chat window. The thing is there's nothing that can't be done in many ways. It's just, you know, stop letting your IT people sell you off-the-shelf Microsoft stuff and sit on their fat ass. It's simple as that. TVNZ. Yeah, be creative. And open source will give you that ability. So trial it. Don't blame me if you've lost some JPEG because, you know, you downloaded GIMP and you did something strange. You know, be aware. There's forums on this. But don't be too scared. The worst thing that's really going to happen in most cases, you're going to lose, you know, worst case scenario, you might delete some files off your computer you didn't want to. But, you know, in this day and age, most of us are backed up. But do experiment with it. I do always recommend, you know, if you've got an old computer, put a Linux on there. Do open a source code file, so download it. And you'll even just say, wow, and even try compiling it. You can even compile them on most open source software on your own computer. Play around with some of these products, guys, and I think you'll find that they do a better job and they cost less money. And as we get more used to it, we'll be more used to our friends using it, and I think we'll be better off. So again, that's my little show on open source. I am pretty passionate about it. And there's so many websites that are dedicated to the top, you know, open source apps for any area. So you don't play around with them. The community in open source is really friendly. There's so many people willing to help online, forums, questions, help, guides. My experience is easier to find, you know, drivers and bug fixes. And don't blame yourself if something goes wrong. That is the nature of software. It is, it's not a, you know, it's almost no fun if it's 1,000% perfect when you download it and open it. Don't think of that as something to stress you out. Think of that something as, you know, if you need to sort of, I need to download a driver. Well, it's not going to hurt you. Again, saved.doc, and I'll leave you to it, guys. So again, I really appreciate you coming in. Sorry for the start there, but enjoy your lovely weekend and update.chat if you need me, and it's Anthony Blomfield. So you take it. Take care, guys.